Hello again, and welcome back to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. I'm Kevin, the host. True Wealth, as always, is brought to you by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker-dealer depository service. As I've said, we've been doing business about 20 years now, a little over that, 21. Started in 96. Coins Plus is always, over the last 20 years, never stopped buying and selling, or buying or selling, all forms of precious metals. That's gold and silver, rare coins, even scrap gold, jewelry, diamonds. We specialize in diamonds. We have some really great wholesale deals for people. We provide the highest rated privately held depository box system in a broad region, very, very large area. There's not a lot of those out there. We do have a pretty strong experience and expertise in building portfolios, portfolio preservation, portfolio management, wealth and capital preservation, things like that. And we have a sister company, Clock Tower Jewelry. That's kind of how we run the diamond situation. But we do have a substantial inventory of diamonds. We have been putting a lot of those in investment portfolios just because what we've done is we have many, many thousands of carats of very nice quality diamonds, and a very large portion of them are certified by what's called the GIA, Gemological Institute, and they have papers, they're certified, and a lot of those make for very good investments. In what I was getting at is we price them in portfolios at wholesale, at their liquid wholesale price. And that's how we perceive pretty much everything, is what's it worth, not what can we get, not what's retail, not what's a price guide say. You got to be really, really careful about stuff like that. Price guides are not offers to buy or sell. They're just reference points. We monitor the market aggressively all day, every day. We know what stuff goes for. So when we sell you something, it is at its liquid market value at that time plus a few percent, which gives you the immediate ability to, you know, to track with the market. This time of the year, I'll go real quick. Coins Plus, 444-0044 in Spokane. That's 509 area code. How about we try it again? If you want to call in Spokane or outside Spokane, whatever, 509 is the area code, 444-0044. Toll free from anywhere, 877-TAP-COIN, that's TAPCION on your phone. Be careful you don't hit the zero for the O, they're different keys. Or 877-827-2646 or 877-827-COIN, whatever's easier for you. Or through our website at coinsplus.com. And as I was briefly touching on earlier, it's really important to us that we provide the absolute best product we can. And ironically, the coin market goes in really long 10-year cycles, and it's actually 10 years up, 10 years down. And each cycle, the down ends up higher than the previous, obviously. But so here's the deal. We were just doing an analysis, and I actually was basing it on an analysis from an extraordinary expert in this industry. You can go all the way back to the 1800s and see the 10-year cycles. You know, basically in the mid-30s, by 37, the coin market was pretty low, it was softer because of the depression. 47, it was really strong. The mint was putting out some amazing products at the time. 57, things in the late 50s, folks, things were not good in this country economically. And you'll hear the liberals talk about the fact that we had a high tax rate in the 90s. in the 1950s. I mean, and they speak about this like they're proud of it. When they, when the conservatives say taxes need to go down, they go, you know, I just heard Richard Dreyfuss yesterday on Neil Cavuto talking about how the high tax rate in the 50s was in the 90s, 90-some percent. The biggest problem is that the conservatives never respond to this stuff. They let this garbage go by. This was a socialist act. It destroyed the country. Things froze up. We weren't doing well. They began to rapidly, rapidly drop taxes and into the 60s. And then in the 60s, guess what happened? We started coming out with fantastic products, some of the coolest cars America's ever made. We started working and getting a man on the moon. The 60s was a different time. You know, we think of it as the old times. We could do anything in the 60s, and we were, you know, competing with Russia and everything else. But the fact of the matter is it's all very directly proportional to tax rates. And coins in the 60s got real hot. The numismatic coins got real hot and high. The 70s, they came down and got real cool. The early 80s, we know about the Hunt brother, the sudden surge in metals prices peaking out January 1st of 1980. That kind of kick-started some stuff. Gold stayed up. Gold and silver kind of stayed up, but it trickled down fairly rapidly. And by the late 80s, numismatic coins were roaring. They were doing incredibly well, phenomenally, beyond your dreams in growth. And then by the 10 years later, by the mid-90s, when I got into this business, coins were much more subtle. And what happens at those times is the coin market compresses, and it's a good thing. It's not so much that prices go down. It's that people get picky. Coins, you know, people start to go for better product. The middle-of-the-road product becomes bullion. It starts to just trade for its precious metals value. And then by 2007, we had a coin market peak. We had gold on the rise. We had everything bringing a substantial premium. And, you know, $20 gold pieces and everything were bringing good, good money. I mean, way, you know, multiples of their melt content. And then we come back to 2017, where we are literally back coming out of a valley. Coins have compressed. And what that means is, there's so many things. Okay, we sell numismatic, semi-numismatic, and bullion products. We'll go backwards. Bullion is just a no-brainer. That's intrinsic value of the product, period. People think bullion is a cube. It's not. Please get that out of your head. Bullion just means whatever you're dealing with is worth only its intrinsic value. In other words, just the content of the metal. Semi-numismatic means this. It's a coin that has a limited issue, you know, something that's old, maybe desirable, but it really doesn't carry much of a premium over the bullion. Obviously, if you have a brain, you automatically think, well, that's the good value. Yes, it is. Because semi-numismatic products, many of them eventually become numismatic products. Once they become numismatic, they're in another category. When you buy semi-numismatic items, circulated Morgan silver dollars, common generic peace dollars, you know, old U.S. gold coins that were circulating at the time, all within a reasonable bandwidth of their precious metals content, they're a great value. So when the market compresses, as it has over the last 10 years, and I'd say primarily the last four, you get all these items that are down in that semi-numismatic category that may have been numismatic. And so the value is terrific, okay? The other thing is the markets begin to trade near their normal price levels. But in 2007, you know, clear through 11 or 12, coins traded well over market, well over market. I mean, 30, 40%, some coins would bring double market value. Now everything's just compressed down. It's very simple to understand. That is, bottom line, folks, the best time to buy. People have flocked into the paper markets for a while, and I've discussed this in depth. They give you nothing. The returns on paper are nothing. It's not because I'm biased. It's because it's fact. You can go pick a stock, and you can say, look, here's a stock after the fact that did well. but it won't do well in the future because it's tapped out. What you can't show me is indexes that have done well. You look at like the Dow. I mentioned it last show. I won't spend much time. But the fact of the matter is if you own the actual stocks in the index, you would have done far worse than the index because the index removes and replaces stocks to keep it looking positive, and then they use weighted moving averages. If you don't believe me, do research. It's not, I'm not making this up. It's a fact. And so as an example, last show I talked about the article that was written in the Wall Street Journal where the guy did the math and he said, I don't understand. The S&P 500 supposedly gained 7.6% over the last year, but the investors in the S&P 500 index have only made 1%. His deduction, I was just, when I was reading the article, I'm like, yes, somebody finally gets it. And then he adds in this idiotic deduction where he says, well, it must mean that people are buying and selling those funds during the year and they're buying high and selling low. And I'm like, dude, you had it. You had it figured out and you missed the conclusion. The conclusion was based on a stupid assumption. And, you know, they're designed that way, just like the Federal Reserve. Folks, I'll tell you what, the Federal Reserve, the way we create a dollar, it's not simple. Go on YouTube and watch a video of how a dollar is created. You will see like 18 steps of bond exchanges and treasury bonds between banks and the transfer of funds and the warrants. And there's a reason they made it a mess. It's twofold. One is money. As Solomon said, money is the answer to everything. Or as a friend of mine who has been an investigator for years and years says in a White Collar Crime, he goes, I just follow the money. The money always gives you the answers. So first of all, the Federal Reserve Act is about money. The Federal Reserve Act was created by the same man, J.P. Morgan, who created the Dow, who actually created the New York Stock Exchange. The level of wealth of the Morgan family is beyond your dreams. We all know about the Rothschilds and, you know, and things like that, but they're just as bad. And the second reason for the Federal Reserve, or the second reason for the complexities of the Federal Reserve creation of a dollar is just so you don't get it. Because if you got it, you'd be like, this is dumb. I mean, your common sense would go, what? You just created something out of nothing. But if they add enough layers to it, it's hard to backtrack. It's really hard to backtrack. And you know, most people, who's going to waste their time doing it and why? Because once you spend all this time unraveling how a dollar is created to prove that there's nothing there, what good is it? Okay, the whole system's connected to it. And I heard a friend of mine, I have a friend who's, God's been very gracious to me over the years in introducing me to people that are connected at such high levels in such important places that I never, ever should know these people. They're huge. And that's a Donald Trump phrase, right? But basically, a friend of mine who's huge on Wall Street was basically explaining to me one time that, you know, the entire system is designed for those at the top to make the money. I mean, it's a well-known fact. There's so many kinks and turns. They're all buddies. They all move job to job. And so like when Standard & Poor's is supposed to be rating a company, they call their buddy Eric, they used to work with, and they talk to Eric and they get his input from, you know, Barclays Financial or whoever it may be. And then, you know, they look out for one another. It's a fact. They call it crony politics or something like that. Crony capitalism, I think, is the term. And it's a buddy-buddy system. They all share in it. They are all making the bucks together. And you and I out here out in the outfield, we just can't do it. I mean, it's just not designed for us to make money. You have to understand the power of marketing and influence. Everything everywhere wants you in because they are profit vehicles. If you go to your bank, they want your money. It's a profit vehicle. If you go, you know, even the IRS, it wants you to keep your money in certain vehicles because it's profitable for them. They can track you. They can collect your funds. They can seize your funds, right? The U.S. Treasury, They want your funds in the system because they need it to keep the boat floating. Every aspect you look at, brokers especially, they want your money in the system because it is extraordinarily profitable. Okay? And I will tell you, folks, hands down, do not be deceived. Brokers make residual income. I'm forever talking to people that are going through misery trying to escape a brokerage. It's just, you know, all kinds of things. I spoke to a lady today who was saying she's trying to take out some money, and she was saying, well, for some reason they can't give it all to me now. They have to split it up and do this and that. Well, I can tell you why. It's the end of the month. He wants one more month's residual income on it. And the way their residual income works, they make on average 1.2% per year. Okay, that might not sound like much, but if you're managing $100 million, which is not uncommon at all for a broker, for a decent brokers will get up to like $200 million a year or in book size, okay? Just in residual income, they can be making $2.5 million a year on that. On top of that, they get income for their churning. Each time they convert you from one stock to another, one investment to another. That's why they don't like you in their money market. The money market is your supposed savings account. But one thing I learned a long time ago before God showed me all of this stuff, clearly, I had a bunch of money at Schwab and I put it in a money market, right? Money market was the safe savings place where you park your money with no risk. And then I lost money. This was back when rates were higher. It was supposed to be paying 5.some%, and I lost money. I'm like, how can I lose money when I put it in a money market? And then they explained to me, well, they're in different investment vehicles, and there was a lot of bonds during this time we bought because there was a transition in the market, and then the bonds fluctuated because rates changed, and basically the yield on the bonds went down, and you lost money. So you're not safe really anywhere, folks, except for where God tells you to go with your money. And by the way, just realize, stockbrokers have a conflict of interest with God's financial system. There are people that are fine believers operating as stockbrokers, but you have to understand they have an agenda. They believe in what they do. Whether it's true or false, it doesn't matter. People have to believe in what they do. I have had people embezzle from me that after a period of time, they begin to believe it's okay. They rationalize and justify and minimize and deny. They literally get to a point where they convince themselves they're due the money. It's fair. It's right. It's something about human nature. It's about our conscience. If they don't do that, they're a sociopath. But sociopaths learn in society they still have to function. They still get judged, and there still are consequences. So they still create justification for what they do. So do not think that you're going to convince your broker by showing him verse after verse after verse in the Bible that he is doing the wrong thing. It's very difficult for them because they have to have your money in the system to make the residual income and to be able to churn it and turn it and call you and say you need to try something different. Just the nature of the beast. I've mentioned recently, for some reason, I don't know why, but for some reason, I know why. Brokers thrive on relationships. Females tend to be more relational than males by a long shot. So I run into females more than males that really want to convince their broker that they're doing the right thing. They want their broker's approval. They're not going to get it. If he gives you approval to leave and buy hard biblical assets, he's first of all admitting that he's not doing the best for you. He's admitting that he's doing it wrong, and he's also giving you permission to take away his income. Now, money is the answer to everything, as Solomon said. And you might think, well, you're doing the same thing, Kevin. I mean, you make money. I do, but first of all, I can justify everything I do biblically. Secondly, I sell you a product once, I make money once. I don't make money. If you choose to store your stuff in our depository service, I don't make a penny. None. until if you choose to sell it, I buy it. I haven't made money. I make money again when I sell it again. And yes, I'm in business. I'm a capitalist. But I will tell you, we do a substantial volume here, and I assure you, our margins are smaller than any I've ever heard of in any business. I spent years as a regional manager for B of A and a branch manager for a large bank corporation called Norwest Bank Corp, which was consumed by Wells Fargo years back. It was a 50-50 merger, basically. The president of Norwest actually became the president of Wells Fargo because aspects of Norwest were bigger. I've seen it all. I've seen people's incomes. I've seen everything that's going on behind the scenes. And so I'll just leave it at that. So basically what we need to really want, I guess to what I'd really like you to comprehend is the fact that your financial stewardship is a very important aspect of the responsibilities that God gives us. I was speaking with someone today about that, the fact that it's important. Christians get so confused about money. They think, you know, thinking about it or worrying about it is wrong. Folks, if you think about it, when you make a financial mistake, okay, first of all, we've got Genesis 1, God creates it all. Genesis 2, he immediately tells them about gold. He tells them where to go get gold. Why? Because it's money. Then he uses the word tov, T-O-W-B, or T-O, it's pronounced T-O-V-B, tov in Hebrew. It is hands down my favorite Old Testament word in Hebrew. It is the most powerful word in the entire Bible, in the Old Testament. It's in at least in the Hebrew language. It means every positive thing you can imagine. It means good, true, best, profitable, prosperity, wealth, health, you know, everything you can imagine is what the word means. It's everything positive, and it's what God used when he said he saw his creation and saw that it was good. That's how he described it. And from that point forward, the economic system began. God began to bless people. God began to hold people accountable financially. I mean, God used money as the entire biblical precept or a big part of the Job story. He stripped away all of Job's wealth. And I was going to say a minute ago, what kind of mistakes affect you the most, okay? I say there are three life commodities that are going to dictate the quality of your life physically, okay? Money, time, and health, right? I mean, granted, you know, this is irrelevant of your spiritual condition. This is physical. You need money, time, and health. And throughout life, you have different ratios of each. In an ideal world, in your fantasy world, you'd have all the time, you know, you'd be 28 years old, you'd have all the money you ever needed, and you'd be in the best shape of your life, and you'd look terrific. Your future would be bright. But what happens is we work our whole life to try to accumulate wealth, and so we're using up our time to accumulate wealth. And we're technically using up our health to get the wealth. It's just a fact. One seems to take from the other. It's just the system that God made. It's part of a fallen world. Now, it's not like if Adam and Eve hadn't sinned. And by the way, don't be the person that says, well, if Adam and Eve hadn't have sinned, we would be in a completely different place. Folks, sorry, but if Adam and Eve hadn't sinned, I would have sinned, or you would have sinned. I mean, you can get over that concept. Adam and Eve were in an adult womb until they gained consciousness of their free will. It's how God started the system. It's a free will experiment, if you will, but it's not really an experiment because God knows the outcome. But it's we're here so that we can choose to spend eternity with God. On our own free will, and we can pray, and he'll go before us, and he'll do things for us, and if we don't, he won't so much. But Adam and Eve were not, you know, the purveyors of sin. They were the first humans. If the first humans did it, obviously they were probably better looking than we are. They were probably healthier than we are. They probably had it going on, to be honest. I'm sure it'd be interesting to look at what the quote-unquote perfect human being looked like. But I'm sure they were a terrific sight, to be honest with you. And so, you know, basically from, you know, the time of Adam and Eve, we have had, you know, from the fall of Adam and Eve, I mean, being in a fallen world, we have had to deal with this decaying of every one of the aspects I talked about. Time is being consumed. Our health is being consumed, and our wealth is being consumed. In Malachi 3, God said, if you tithe, I will keep the destroyer or the devourer from you, okay? That is very interesting because you and I both know time is being consumed, our health is being consumed, and God says there's something called the devourer that is consuming your wealth. And what that means, I don't know. I have experienced it at times in my life, for sure, where you think you're doing okay financially, and it just takes a few bad situations, and all that money's just gone, right? And so we've battled with that all along, and you do need to tithe. That's an important aspect. The whole idea that you're not, you know, it's, oh, God loves a cheerful giver, so I can only give 37 cents this week because otherwise I'll just be bitter about it. I've literally heard people use that logic, and it's like, no, you have to give God the first fruits. The point isn't give as you feel. The point is give what he requires and fix your heart and fix your attitude because he's God and you're not. And be glad for every breath you draw is a blessing, and you need to enjoy life as if that's the case because the bottom line is he can take it away from you at any minute. And it's not your life, it's his life. We are so frail and so easily removed from this planet. It's a blessing that he puts us here. It's a blessing that we get to know him, and we need to honor him with that. And we see the byproduct of liberalism and anti-God just swarming around us now, saturating this world. And at the lead is Islam, the most destructive demonic religion in the history of the world. It's the resurrection of Baal worship. It's terrible. So we've got to realize this. But anyway, back to the, you know, what I was talking about, essentially. We have got an obligation. What I was talking about, when you take time, health, and money, those are the three things that impact you physically the most. If you lose your health, if you do something that hurts your health, if you get on a ladder and you're not being smart and you fall and you break your shoulder and your leg and you're mad. You know, it's a long, hard road, but you've just taken your time. You've ruined it, right? It may take forever to heal. It may take a while, you know, whatever the case. Those kinds of things wake us up. They make us really wake up about life. Well, the financial stuff for most people has the same impact. If you make a financial mistake, and trust me, folks, I have, they sting and you learn and you adapt and you mold, I hope, okay? I know there's people out there that have no budget. They just spend into oblivion. They go broke and they don't understand why. And I just recently was talking to a gal who, you know, spent all of their money, their family money, and trust me, she's a little on the edge. I won't say how I know her, but she spent all the money on some ridiculous tattoo. Her husband left his job, and they were on a Cobra plan, and they needed to buy health insurance, and it was about $400 a month, and she didn't do it, and she went instead and spent $1,200 on this ridiculous tattoo. And then her husband fell very ill and ended up in the hospital with a $75,000 hospital bill. And she says, why is God doing this to me? And I said, you might want to think about the fact that you chose not to get health insurance and chose to get a tattoo instead. And, you know, of course, that went over right in one ear and out the other. But the fact of the matter is God isn't always doing it to us. That's why financial lessons are so important. So what I'm getting at simply without going on too long is the fact that God gave us finances for a very good reason. It is a tangible track record of our heart's condition. It gives us the ability to learn and grow. It reflects our wisdom. You know, there's so many scriptures in Proverbs, the book of wisdom, about how you handle your wealth and your finances. Speculatory use of money, usury is also usury. They're bad. Okay. Usury is interest-based lending or an interest-based system. Speculation is investing with the hope of getting a return, like faith, without any real fact supporting it. We are not to do that, okay? God says clearly everything over and over about the use of wealth and the use of interest. Our whole fiat currency system is based on a lie. It's all fallacy. It's a communist-designed economic system by John Maynard Keynes. Unquestionable. You do a little research on the man, and you will be like, what in the world are we doing? Why in the world would America adopt an economic system from a radical right or whatever he is, red-bellied communist, folks? It's crazy. And it is designed to confiscate and redistribute our wealth. It's a sinful system. Now, you're put in it as a youth from birth. That doesn't mean you're a sinner for being part of the game. But you need to realize when Christ said, render unto Caesar, he was holding in his hand a piece of fiat currency, a piece of currency whose value was declared by Caesar himself. He spoke differently of gold and silver. Gold and silver is really the money of God. It's an element that comes out of the earth. Christ was not going to get into it with Caesar when they said, whose money is this and who do you pay taxes to and all that. He's like, you render unto Caesar what's his. And he basically held up and handed back the coin. That coin was fiat currency. Christ knows. When you look up the word mammon in the Bible that we all know, you know, God cannot serve, or man cannot serve God and mammon. Mammon means man-made money. That's the definition in Greek. It's a dual meaning word. It means the self-made man, and it also means fiat currency. It's used to describe fiat currency made by emperors back in Greece. If you read Greek history and Greek different kinds of information from that era, Christ speaks about that. He knows that it's man's desire. And so you've got to stay away from the love of money, but you have such a responsibility with your money. Christ talked about money in 2/3 of his parables. It's so important, and it's a heart condition because, you know, the way you handle your finances, obviously it reflects your heart. It absolutely reflects it, undeniably. You can't deny that it does. And Christ said, you better have your heart straight when it comes to money. But Christ also, you know, would want us to invest wisely and safely. And the best way to do that is to follow biblical precepts and standards. And if you think about it, if Christ was here today, folks, I assure you that he would be buying precious metals. Guaranteed. If he was here for a long time and he wanted to save, he would not go to a broker and put his money in the stock market, because he would know what's coming. He would know that the stock market yo-yos up and yo-yos down, but it really never goes anywhere. It just sucks everybody in, and then it sucks the money out of everybody, and they do it over and over again, and they push us all towards this artificial equality. Yes, the rich get richer. And what's ironic is our economic system is designed to make the rich richer and the middle class poorer. And then the liberals yell and scream and blame it on capitalism so that people ask for more socialism and more socialism until finally everybody's broke. Folks, look at the history of any socialist country. Not only do their leaders, you know, commit heinous genocide, but they become broke. Everybody gets poorer and poorer and poorer. Average starting wages of college kids coming out right now are only half of the inflation gain over the last 30 years. So what I mean is this. 30 years ago, which would take us to what, 1987, a graduating college senior in mechanical engineering was the average starting wage was about $34,000. Today, the average starting wage for those guys is about $55,000. So that's about a two-thirds increase from 1987. But in that same amount of time, the dollar has lost the dollar has lost two-thirds of its spending power. So essentially, to keep up with inflation, those guys should be going up to $100,000 a year. It is, this system is slowly depleting the wealth of the individual. When I was coming out of college in the 80s, late 80s or 90, my friends who were engineers, I mean, that was good money. I mean, they could buy, they'd move to Seattle. A good friend of mine bought around 91, bought a beautiful home in, not beautiful, nice home in Seattle proper for $140,000. This is about 91 or 92. He was driving a brand new pickup. He was living a good life. Now, you try to do that, you buy the same house in Seattle now, as he bought back then, is about $850. I checked it out the other day, $850. So I don't even know what the mortgage would be on that. And the pickup, the same pickup he was driving at the same trim levels, like $55,000. Okay. When he bought the pickup, it was like $24,000. I mean, you just, we're having our wealth fleeced is what's happening. And so really what you need to do financially is you need to obey God's precepts biblically. You need to put your money in hard assets, in biblical-based assets. The only thing that is biblically attributed as true wealth, gold and silver, livestock, real estate, human life, and precious stones, those are it. They've lasted forever. They maintain with inflation. Sure, there's fluctuation and manipulation, but there's peace of mind and there's liberty. And once you disconnect from the system, you know, if you have your money in any kind of a financial system, paper as we call it, which it isn't, it's cyber air, it's cyber dust. There are 1,000 scenarios by which you could lose that money. And you might say, yeah, but none of those had ever happened. Okay, fine. But there's still 100 different ways you could lose your money. If you own precious metals and you believe the Bible where God says that it will have wealth value clear to the last bell on earth, the day of his wrath, the reckoning, whatever it is, people will cast their gold and silver in the streets because it maintains its value until that day. It says it won't buy you salvation. We know that. And that's why they're finally chucking it, because it's over. Then we know that God puts it all over heaven. It's bedecked. Heaven is absolutely bedecked in gold. I believe heaven is a physical place. I don't think it's some spiritual figurative fantasy. And I believe that God sent some part of his creation out around the universe to and literally brought gold back. There's myths and stories of the Sumerians and Akkadians that long, long, long ago, that beings, they actually have hieroglyphs of UFOs coming to Earth, which is probably consistent with the stories of the sons of God coming into the daughters of men and all that, coming down to Earth and mining all this gold and leaving with it, as well as plutonium or uranium, and converting it to plutonium and taking off with it. You know, I mean, I can get extreme, but, you know, maybe there's stuff out there that's running on nuclear power, makes complete sense. And then, you know, where's the gold come from? I don't know, but it's a physical place. So it's going to have wealth forever. God gave it to Christ. His first gift from the wise men was gold, frankincense, and myrrh. The frankincense and myrrh have spiritual meaning that I won't get into in this show, but there's a reason for it. So the bottom line is there's only one way that you can lose your wealth in precious metals, and that's by theft. It's not by the devaluation of it. It's not going to devalue. It never has, folks. People go, well, what about this? What about that? Folks, I understand that you don't have 5,000 years of world history on the top of your head, but I've looked into it. There is never, ever been a time where precious metals have not been the pinnacle form of wealth. They are money. There's countless reasons why they are. They're fungible. There's a limited quantity of them. They have incredible properties. They're unique over and above so many other things. They're infinitely divisible based on their molecular structure. They don't tarnish. There's no naturally occurring substance on Earth that will consume them, and it goes on and on. The bottom line is there's a way that God prescribed. We help people do it. I assure you, and as I've discussed in the past, I've done it with family. I've done it with friends. And also, folks, you and I know if you've got half of a brain that any system that jams us in 10 years from $3.8 trillion in deficit to $20 trillion in deficit, the equivalent of $67,000 for every man, woman, and child in America, which is also about $335,000 in deficit for every taxpaying citizen, it's never going to get paid off. You and I know that it cannot sustain this way. And when we're looking at Trump and his administration and budgeting, they're not going to make the proper cuts. They can't. We're living on crazy debt. We've got special interest groups sucking us dry. We've got, patron saints overlooking every defunct section of the government, and then if they want to defund Planned Parenthood, I mean, the liberals, are they not misbehaving at a level like you've never seen before? It's heinous. And yet there's people that turn on the news and listen to this garbage. And I really try to think all the time, God, am I wrong? Am I misunderstanding this? Is politics not as important as I think it is? Am I maybe skewed in my thinking? How can people think this way? Maybe, Lord, am I not compassionate enough? I mean, I try to find out and I seek the truth. It's so important to me. And God's like, no, truth is truth. And the conservative movement in general has a handle on the truth. Now, there's all kinds of factions within that. There's all kinds of misdirection. It's humanity. But in general, the conservative movement is that God is at the head. Man has a certain set of rights that you do not mess with, period. That there's a set of rules and regs, that there's a set of laws and morals that sustain us. And that you believe in those, and those should be honored, especially your religious belief, which is exactly what the point of the Bill of Rights was. This is why this country was, hands down, the greatest country ever created in the history of the world. Bar none. Bar none. And last week, I don't even know anymore. Just kidding. But Monday, I started to discuss the Bill of Rights, which I was going to do today, but here I go again. So I'm going to go over a little bit more of the Constitutional Bill of Rights. Folks, I want to tell you real quick. We're closed this Saturday, believe it or not, yes, for the Gonzaga game. Gonzaga is in the Final Four, and if they win, they're going to the top. That's a big deal. We're in Spokane, nice little community college here, a private college. I mean, that's an impressive situation. Obviously, the Zags are pretty hot. I'm not a huge follower of them, but I've watched their games coming up, and I'm just super blown away. I happened to also watch them lose to BYU, which was pretty depressing, but it might have been what they needed before they headed into this tournament. So we are actually closing, first time in history, for a sporting event, which is pretty bizarre, but I did it. So hopefully you're not planning on coming Saturday. If you are, give us a call. We'll try to figure out a way to work around you. Just keep that in mind and don't hold it against me. I'm kind of excited about it. I could get into all the politics with Trump's, healthcare mess and all kinds of fundraising stuff that's going on. I'm not going to do that. I think what I'm going to do is just jump right in here. Okay, Monday I talked about the First Amendment, your right to religion and to speak freely and to communicate with the government and the protection of the press, which has become the arm, ironically, of the socialist movement. The First Amendment was designed to protect a free press. Free press. That means not obligated to any narrative or agenda that is imbalanced. A true journalist, which now, folks, true journalism is almost dead. It really is. And I want to say something about bias, okay? I had someone the other day giving me some baloney logic about bias in the media. Trying to say that bias is deviation from mainstream thinking. Wrong, 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 wrong. If that was the case, Sodom and Gomorrah would be right, and anything outside of that would be biased. Bias exists. God is tremendously biased. Bias does not mean you're wrong, but bias can affect your thinking. If you have a bias towards God, I personally believe there's a strong possibility that you can see clearly, much more clearly. However, you and I know there's all kinds of quacko wackos out there that use the name of God for crazy, heinous behavior. Not just Muslims. I've seen Christians that are just disgusting people. I'll be honest, just disgusting people that literally think they're hearing the voice of God and they're doing just terrible things. An attorney friend of mine had a client that came that he was assigned by the court who was molesting his daughters. And all the way from 16, 14, 12 down to 5.5 years old. I know it's gross. I'm the messenger. He sat in front of this attorney and he told this attorney that he knew that God gave him those children because he had such a high sex drive. He needed an outlet, or not children, girls. He had all girls. He was convinced that God gave him those girls for that very purpose. That's disgusting. Not my words. Just telling you. This is how bent out of shape people can get with God block, you know, or whatever you want to call it. So the art of faith, the art of Christianity is to empty yourself to anything but God. To be vulnerable, to be able to look unbiased at yourself or through God's bias. That man, for him to sear his conscience to that level, is a sick, sick, sick man. I've seen people do unbelievable, immoral, unethical acts in business and try to bring God into it. It's okay, I'm not, you know, obviously my faith is the most important thing to me. But I have to apologize sometimes when I tell people I'm a Christian because I want them to know I'm not a self-righteous, judgmental, you know, I don't think that I have a crusade per se that I have to go out and convert or kill. I believe what I believe. This nation gives us freedom of religion. Islam cannot coexist with that because they prohibit free thought. But the First Amendment, our founding fathers knew that your religious liberties were the most important thing that you could possess and that they were important for you to have a free exercise of your religion. People push that. People push atheism. They're allowing people now to push their faith onto other, to destroy the faith of others. And this is wrong. So that's that. Second Amendment is the right to bear arms. It's the right to protect yourself with a gun. There is this debate going on that never seems to stop, whether it's a right that protects the state or a right that protects the individuals and blah, blah, blah. There are people that just don't get it. It is simple. If you look at the core of its of the point made, it throws in a well-regulated militia. And what the original intent was to protect ourselves from a rampant, tyrannical overrun of government. So the well-regulated militia basically says, when you get a large band of men together with guns, they'd better be controlled. They'd better have a justified purpose. And that purpose is to protect themselves from severe government tyrannical overreach. Now, That is a very unpopular belief around liberals. Liberals want to make gun ownership about self-defense and hunting, in which case they can say, well, you don't need these big banana clips on your AR-15, and you don't need a semi-automatic Glock that holds 15 bullets. No, you need one bullet at a time, you know, to hunt. Otherwise, it's not really a sport, right? No, that's how they try to pick it apart. Then they come up with all these ridiculous rules and regulations. Now, we're in this huge era about background checks. To a degree, yeah, I suppose. But we do have the right to bear arms. I think it makes just as much sense for us to, you know, to have the ability to remove someone's right to carry an arm. But now they're trying to impose mental health stuff to remove people's arms. Okay, so what happens to a veteran who's back from war with PTSD? Do we take our veterans, have their doctors say, boy, he's got PTSD, that's a mental illness, and I'm going to take the guns away from the veterans? Obama said time and again that his veterans is what he feared the most. Folks, no, our veterans deserve their guns. It's part of being American, red, white, and blue. You take away our guns, you take away everything. I assure you that the right to bear arms puts enough discomfort on the back of our government to keep them in check. However, they are beginning to arm themselves higher and higher and higher. We're getting to the point where they're literally conducting like 60-some thousand SWAT raids a year around the U.S. They're coming in hard and fast on people. I talked a month ago about a guy I knew, Dean Bellamy, who'd been through kind of a battle with Ozzy Knezevich, and he was assassinated. They said first they used a, quote, less lethal round. It wasn't a hollow point, but this was before he'd ever fired a shot. They shot him through his window while they were negotiating with him, and then he came out blazing and, you know, whatever. But they came to a domestic abuse call, which he'd already been suing the city over, falsely accusing him of, him because he made a mistake. He got in with a woman who went crazy on drugs, which, trust me, bad women can ruin a good life. But they showed up with a SWAT team. What's a SWAT team do? They hunker down, they load up, and they point guns. They're ready to shoot right now. You know, they're using SWAT raids everywhere. So they are gaining the upper hand. The purpose of being able to protect against a tyrannical government is you have to be relatively equally armed. Every single time there's some kind of shooting, the left breaks out the same old argument. We got to take away everybody's guns. And then they start, no, just assault rifles. And I mean, what is the logic? Folks, every single case, there is endless cases that defend the other side. For example, that military guy that flew from Alaska down to whatever airport it was, Dade County, maybe Miami-Dade, and shot people in the baggage claim area. Then I hear that the airline said, as a general case, domestic airlines transport many thousands of guns a day. So just say it's 2,500 guns a day get transported on aircraft, right? So that's 1 million guns a year get transported. One guy in how many years? Just say 10 years, even though it's probably been 50. Just say one guy in 10 years goes off the deep end and shoots people. Not that it's okay, but one guy of 1 million guns a year in 10 years, so one out of 10 million goes off the deep end. Uh-oh, we need a new law, right? We've got to make it so you can't transport your guns on a plane, and you can't mail them, and you can't do this. And folks, they're just tearing away at the fabric of this nation. The Second Amendment is very much like, you know, in the beginning, God created, right? Uh-oh, we got to throw in evolution and start tearing that apart. Then God did Adam and Eve. Nope, we got to do Adam and Steve. And then they go chronologically through the Bible, the devil does, and he breaks it down to destroy people's faith. Same with the American way, the Constitution. We have got to go. Now they're starting to take free speech. They're starting to say screaming over the top of other people is a free speech right. Shutting down people with opinions that differ with you is a free speech right. And they're saying you don't have to listen to people you don't disagree or you don't agree with. And college campuses are teaching kids that they have safe zones where they can't be offended. And all these things, they're tearing away at the fabric of the Bill of Rights. Why these crazy professors are doing it, I don't know. But it is the infiltration of the communistic, Fabianistic, progressive Saul Alinsky mindset. It's destroying us. I mean, you know, the feminist movement is rampant and so on. It's just consuming amendment by amendment by amendment. They want your guns, folks. They want them. It's a right that makes all the other rights stand still without. You know, next is the improper quartering. We're short on time. I'll tell you, folks, I believe in my deepest heart, if you've got 401ks and IRAs, you should talk to us about rolling them out. You need to secure your funds. Markets are peaked out right now, peaked. It's a perfect time to get out. Coins are compressed. They're coming out. They're expanding. There's great value. Precious metals are incredibly well valued. They've had their down cycle. They've packed down the dirt. You've got to have that in healthy markets. It's such a good time. I assure you, it is a smart, wise time. And you just make the move. Give us a call, 444-0044. Toll free 877-TAP-COIN or through our website at coinsplus.com. I assure you, we have a tremendous amount of experience. We have some incredible inventory. We build awesome portfolios, folks. They're so cool. I was just going over with one of my employees yesterday, the 10-year cycles, and I was just saying, look how cool this is. Right now is literally, for semi-numismatic and numismatic stuff, is the best time since 96. I mean, and I got in 96, and I did well as an investor, folks. That's how I built the building and so on. Buy and hold for 10 years and you will be blown away. We it's worth it. This is a great time to preserve and protect your wealth. So once again, I do thank you for tuning in. I appreciate it greatly. Keep praying for us, for the show, spiritual protection. And more so, folks, get on your knees for this nation. Let God do great things. Expect miracles from him. Thanks again for tuning in. Take care. God bless. I'll be back Friday. Bye-bye.